This episode of the podcast is sponsored by Barrage Coffee. It's veteran-owned and operated by Kyle Early and his crew, and I can't thank them enough for their sponsorship. My next guest is a United States Marine veteran, author, public speaker. Let's welcome Scott Leeper. How you doing, brother?
Good, man. Good. Appreciate it.
Oh, it's my honor, man. So you got a lot of things going on, and we'll jump into that. For the listeners who don't know you, I like to dig into your background, you know, where you grew up, what led you to join the Marines, and how was your childhood growing up?
Yeah. So I grew up pretty unassuming, if you will. We were on a small, I'd call it a small scale farm. We had a herd of goats and chickens and rabbits and dogs, and I had everything all the way to iguanas and snakes too. A lot of animals growing up. So I was pretty used to the manual labor as a kid. And then in high school, just, you know, I graduated like a 2.8 GPA. So I wasn't like the most intelligent kid, but I also really didn't apply myself in school. And so college wasn't really in the picture. My dad and I went and we talked to some recruiters, went and talked to the Navy recruiter, went and talked to the Air Force recruiter, and I was going to go to the Air Force. I was talking about the Air Force for like 8 months. And a buddy of mine one day, dude I went to school with, he says, hey man, I got to go talk to the Marine recruiters. Why don't you go with me? I'm like, I'm not going to talk to them. They're psycho, man. So he's like, but come on, dude, just, you don't have to talk to him. I just got to go ask a few questions. Just go with me. I'm like, okay, fine, cool. Like I was one of those, just roll with it. Don't care. And so went with him and I'm sitting on a couch in this recruiter's office. And he's asking questions and this big old staff sergeant looks at me and says, so what are you in here for? I'm like, man, don't talk to me, dude. I'm going to the Air Force. Like, just leave me alone. And I was closed off too, man. Arms crossed, looking the other way, like didn't care. And he's like, that's cool, man. That's cool. But he just started shooting shit with me. And about 2.5 hours later, I'm in a parking lot on the phone with my mom. It's about 2 weeks before my 18th birthday. And she's like, and I'm like, mom, it's the coolest thing in the world. And you can sign me up right now. Like he sold me. And of course she wasn't all too happy about that. She started yelling over the phone. It's like, I'm not signing you up for anything. I can't believe that you just changed just like that. And you can wait till your 18th birthday. You're not going to put that on me. You know, like she just like lost it. And so sure enough, two weeks later, my 18th birthday, I'm down at MEPS raising my right hand, joining the Marine Corps. So
she wanted you to join the Air Force?
I think she probably, she never really said it, but I think she was kind of in line with my thinking initially with those guys are psycho and like they do nothing but kill people. And like, you know, like, I mean, we're from small town Mishawaka, Indiana, and like there's not a whole lot going on. We're not anywhere near a military installation. So it wasn't until the war kicked off where this area was introduced to the military because there was a reserve unit in the area that I ended up becoming a part of, at one point. And so this area turned into like patriotic military area real quick. But before that, there was no, you know, nobody really knew much about the military, especially during peacetime. And so, you know, for me to be like, yeah, mom, I'm joining the Marine Corps. Like, oh my God, my baby's going to kill people. And like, you know, that, like now that's speculation. I don't really know if that's actually the case, but you know, when a mom starts yelling and now that I'm a parent, I can kind of appreciate, you know, where she was going with it. You know what I mean? But at the same time, it just still remind me to this day that I was the good kid until that point. But then I always remind her like, hey, that experience turned me into who I am nowadays, you know? So, but yeah, that's just no real special, like I'm going to serve my country and I'm going to do, you know, I'm going to, you know, patriotism and all this stuff. It was nothing like that. I was just an unassuming kid, about 135 pounds soaking wet. I'm like, no, I'm just not really doing much. This sounds cool.
Damn. So, yeah, I was about 185 when I went in, and I'd give anything to get back down to that weight.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm at 215 now.
You work out a lot?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it helps with a lot of PTSD and stuff like that, man.
Oh, yeah, it's a, yeah, therapeutic.
Cool.
Yeah, man.
In your experience, what was the best part about being a Marine and why?
You know, again, I think it's just, it's you become this other person that, and you have this esprit de corps, this identity, you know, and I can only speak to the Marine Corps. I don't know what other branches, you know, how they really feel about this too, but like in the Marine Corps, it's like, you have that title of Marine. But really for me, because I really didn't have a ton of discipline and I didn't really have like a real sense of direction and duty. You know, once I joined, you know, that stuff became very real, very quick, and it became an integral part of me. And I think because of that is why I'm on the mission I'm on now, and why I've put myself through such resiliency tests, now, and I wouldn't have done that had I not gone through those experiences and become that.
Yeah, I would agree. I was a little shithead when I was in high school. I mean, I played ball. I thought I knew everything. I didn't know my elbow from my asshole, as you know how that old saying goes. But I had a coach that mentored me. You know, I think the world of him. His name's Coach Smith, and I, he's a great guy, and he taught me a lot of discipline. To this day, I can't thank him enough. So you leave for, what is it, MEPS? I think y'all go to MEPS too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you go to boot camp. Where'd you go to boot camp at?
San Diego, Hollywood.
Was it a damn eye opener for you, or was you kind of nervous? What was about to happen?
Yeah, I think for a lot of us young 18-year-old kids, you know, first time away from mommy and daddy, it's a very, very fast oh shit moment. You know, and I mean, being in receiving, you know, they tell us to go shave. And of course, most of us are still baby faces. You know, we still have, like, we have some hair, but it's not like we got to shave every day. Obviously that has completely reversed course, but, you know, I remember being in receiving and we go in there, we got to shave, like we got 2 minutes to shave real fast. And I cut the shit out of my neck. Like I'm sitting there thinking that like I'm bleeding out, I hit my carotid or something. And I go and tell the drill instructor in receiving, and he's like, basically doesn't give a shit. Like, well, go sew yourself up and get your ass in a rack. Like, didn't care, you know? Yeah, it was a real fast oh shit moment, man. Like for a lot of us.
Yeah. Well, you had a different experience happen to you while you were in, you know, it was 2001. What happened? September 11th. You were,
yeah.
How'd that kind of unfold?
So I went to boot camp, July 17th, 2001. And so, went into boot camp during peacetime, graduated boot camp in wartime. We were on a firing week. We were in firing week, in Camp Pendleton. And, first time many of us 18 years old had touched a weapon like that. And, then they pull us off the line early. They put us up into these bleachers, and there's the chaplain, there's the command headshed, and like a slew of people, and we're like, what is going on? Like thinking somebody like off themselves on a firing line or something. And they told us the towers fell, but then they also told us about the Pentagon getting hit too, and the kid sitting next to me started losing it. And I guess his dad was a colonel in the Pentagon for the Air Force. And so fortunately for him, he got to call home, talk to his dad. His dad was good. His dad was on the other side of the Pentagon when it got hit. But yeah, and that was like, you know, but for a lot of us, I think for me, because we were in that boot camp bubble, we didn't really, at least I didn't really grasp the full gravity of the situation. And even though they were telling us like, hey, it's a strong possibility you guys are going to war, like it really didn't set in until we had graduated boot camp, went home for 10 days, kind of seen like it was still fresh because we graduated October 12th. So a month later, and you know, they're still rubble in New York kind of thing, and still looking for bodies. And, It was at that point where it was like, oh shit, kind of thing. And then MCT, that's when the instructors really brought it up a notch. And we got to see some of the footage, like those, the little box TVs. They brought one in, and of course back then we didn't have the internet and we didn't have the fiber optics and all this other stuff. So you're talking these, you know, the rabbit ear antennas with the cable, maybe the cable, maybe not. And we're trying to see what's going on in the footage of 9/11. And but it wasn't until we got home and we saw the footage again on our own, we're like, oh shit, you know? So yeah, unique situation. Everybody says they know where they were, and man, I see that firing line clear as day. I see those bleachers clear as day.
Yeah. I can still see me standing in the motor pool watching that little TV, like the one that's sitting on this desk right here. And I'm like, and I hate saying it, but I honestly, growing up in little town, Ohatchee, Alabama, I didn't know what the damn World Trade Centers were. And I'm being honest with you, I really didn't.
I don't really think I knew what they were either. I mean, you know, you watch the old, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies, and I think even like Home Alone, I think you can see the towers in those movies. But like, you know, it's a big city that we're not a part of, so we really don't know what they are. And small town Mishawaka, Indiana, it's the same thing for us. I really didn't have an idea of what they were. I just knew, oh shit, I joined the Marine Corps right before shit hit the fan. So, you know, that was really the focus for me.
Yeah, and I damn sure wasn't going to ask my senior NCO what the damn World Trade Center was. He'd probably smoke me till my tongue fell out. You know what I'm talking about.
All too well.
What was your actual job in the Marines, MOS-wise?
So I started out as a heavy equipment operator. I was a reservist at the time initially. It wasn't until 2009 that I actually lat moved from heavy equipment school to heavy equipment operator to CID, the Criminal Investigation Division.
Oh wow!
Yeah, good. Yeah, quite the lat move.
You don't want to see them coming up to your room.
Yeah, we weren't the most liked by a lot of people, but
was y'all kind of undercover as well? Because you were really in the Army, you really couldn't tell who the hell was CID. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we wore civilian clothes and, we would carry concealed and those kind of things. But usually when we were, you know, walking out to a scene or something, usually people knew who we were. You know, especially if we've been around a particular command enough, like they knew our faces pretty easily, and knew that, you know, it's kind of like the fish, you know, you get the aerial view of the shark in the water and the fish just kind of spread out. It was kind of, you know, kind of like that too. They're like, all right, we're leaving. We're vacating the premises now. Yeah. So, yeah, no, but it was, I was a heavy equipment operator for both deployments.
Yeah. I never met anybody in the CID dude. I didn't want to, you know, if you did, I think you're getting in trouble. You know what I mean? So it's cool to meet one, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's actually being in CID and the mistakes I made is an integral part of my story.
Yeah, we'll get to them if you want to talk about them. Sure. How many deployments did you go on, and where'd you go, and what was your mission?
I went on two, both to Iraq, and the first one was in 2003. And, you know, we started in Kuwait once the Shock and Awe campaign kicked off, and we came in behind. And as a heavy equipment operator, we would build skeleton OPs and basically, a square of sand berms. And then we'd build up from there. I remember going to the furthest we went, I think, was we called it Camp Chesty. And we ended up building a flight line out there. So we basically built up different operating posts for people to operate out of. But I remember one point, though, because, I mean, there at the beginning, you know, we're trying to use Blue Force trackers, which are about as worthless as, you know, anything.
Things, man.
Yeah, they about as worthless as tits on a bull. And these things.
Wow. Oh, boy. Yeah.
I remember at one point they were so worthless that we found ourselves in front of division.
I can't stop about that.
That's dude. Who those guys were that we passed. We probably need to turn around. So in 03, we followed behind, and we never made it all the way up to Baghdad, but I think one of the, I forget what the, I think it's Al Duaniya, college or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was a very weird feeling being on this college campus that was just shot to shit. And here it's supposed to be a learning institution, and it's in the middle of a war zone. It's pretty, pretty weird feeling. But, and then again, we went again in 2006, and we were on Al-Takadim Air Base in Iraq. And, our mission then was, route repair. So I call us a glorified road crew. We would go, IEDs being real bad. At the time, and you had mentioned earlier about 2005, I went again in 06, and IEDs were still a big issue. So our mission was to find, divots in the road where they could put a pressure plate. And what might seem, very unassuming, and some guys are like, man, that sucks as a mission. But the thing is, if you think about it, just a divot like this in a road where they could put a pressure plate might save five lives, six lives, you know what I mean? So, so we would fill in those gaps, those holes. We'd find, places where IEDs could be buried, in the side of the road, and we'd fill in those. And then our engineers, they did the route clearance. And so, that was our mission in, 06. We lost, one guy, Aaron Seal, lost him October 1st, 2006. And a few other injuries here and there, but, we were other than that, we were fortunate that we really didn't get hit too much.
Yeah. And then you went back and what?
What's that?
What year did you go back again?
It was 03 and then 06 and 07, in 07. Then I came back in 07.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, we lost two dudes from our push from Kuwait all the way up to Krit, man. We lost two dudes in the first day. It was crazy.
Yeah. See, and that's, yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, shit, and you're supposed to be here 12 months, if you don't get extended, which a lot of people do, So mm-hmm. It's like, damn, this is going to be a long 12 months. And there was more to follow. God rest their souls. But,
yeah,
I kind of want to switch gears. You went over your military career. I kind of want to switch gears and go into what you're doing today with what you got going on in the veteran community. You're doing some good stuff, and you've had some setbacks, and we'll go over them. You lost your father, and we'll talk about him as well. So if you can go over what you're doing in the veteran community, and it'd be good.
So now I'm a life coach, and I started a nonprofit for life coaching for vets, at little to no cost to them, because to find life coaches that are really worth their weight and worth their value. The coaches that are extremely valuable, they know it, and they charge for it, and rightfully so. And so I know a lot of vets may not be able to either afford it, or they just don't quite understand it. So they're not ready to put that kind of investment in it. So I created a nonprofit to provide that coaching for them at little, no cost to them. So, and I utilize this. What's that?
You have to go to school for this?
Yeah, I've been through, so I've got four certifications as a health and life coach, and I've got two certifications in neurolinguistic programming. One is sitting right there, through the, Empowerment Partnership. And, an NLP is, utilizing the language of the mind to consistently achieve the outcomes that you desire. And what that basically means is making change on the unconscious level. So when you make it on the unconscious level, it's sustainable. A lot of people try making change on a conscious level. And to give you the example, it's kind of like, every New Year's, how many people are like, I'm going to the gym and I'm going to lift weights and I'm going to drop 700 pounds. And by January 3rd, they're out.
Yeah. See, because they're trying,
yeah, and it's because they tried to make that change on the conscious level. Thing is, change has to happen on the unconscious level, and when you do it that way, it's a seamless process, and it's not hard. It's actually fairly easy. I'll give you an example, and this is one that a lot of vets can relate to. There was a couple examples. Actually, one was a Navy chief who every July 5th was just a real rough time of year for him because that was the time of year that a couple of his sailors had committed suicide, and one had actually affected him pretty deeply. And so he'd always go to this dark place every July 5th. Well, I did about an hour long coaching session with him. Now, mind you, most of my coaching is done in 3 months. But that's because there's a lot of stuff that we cover, a lot of different areas of life that we cover and make change in. But this particular one, you know, an hour long conversation, hour coaching session. And in that, you know, we talked about, we worked through his shame and his guilt and the pain around his sailor suicide. Oh, fast forward to July 8th. I reached out to him. I said, "Hey man," I said, "so how's it going? How was July 5th for you?" And he said, "Honestly, I didn't even think about it." And it's not that he didn't think about his sailors, but he didn't associate his sailors with the negative impact that their suicides was having on him. So the process isn't about just forgetting those that we lost. It's about reassociating how they are attached to our lives. Instead of every time we think of them, we go to this dark place, we drown in a bottle of whiskey, go stick a needle in our arm, put nose candy up our nose, numb ourselves with sex or whatever the numbing mechanism looks like, we're able to shift it entirely. So then when we think about that person, it's from a positive perspective.
Yeah.
I did it again with another one that I actually did work with for 3 months. He was a National Guardsman, and he was going through the RIP process with the incoming unit. He was training up the staff sergeant. The staff sergeant goes on this mission that he was supposed to go with, but he got pulled for another mission. Well, the staff sergeant never made it back. And so for him, it was a lot of shame and a lot of guilt built around, well, what could I have done differently? How could I have trained him differently? There was something that I should have done. I should have been out there with him. I mean, many of us know those thoughts that go through our minds, and they're going a million miles an hour, right? And it just takes us for a ride and takes us to a very dark place. Well, for him, it was the same thing. It took him to a very dark place where June 5th every year was that time of year. And he would go into his office. He'd shut the door. He'd turn the lights on. He wouldn't do anything. Around that time, he'd push his family away. He'd be, you know, he'd be real short with his family, compartmentalizing everything. Like many of us do. And so we had one of our sessions on June 6th. And I said, "So how was yesterday?" And he said, "Dude, honestly, I have never been more productive on June 5th than I was yesterday."
Wow.
That's powerful.
Yeah. I agree. Right?
And that is, and I'm not focusing, the coaching doesn't focus on, you know, what's wrong with you. I'm not sitting there basing everything I'm doing around somebody's PTSD. Listen, I've been diagnosed with all that stuff too. And for reasons that we'll get into, but I'm not worried about what's wrong with the person. I'm not worried about what some book says about that person. I let professional mental health care providers deal with that. What I focus on is how are we moving forward? And that is the key, because where your focus goes, your energy goes, right? So if we're focusing on what's wrong with us, the sessions are going to be, well, this is what's wrong with me. This is why my life sucks. Great. That doesn't really matter when it comes to moving forward. So we focus on how do we release the past? How can we obtain positive ID on ourselves? A little play on words, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of truth behind that. A lot of us have a very negative outlook on ourselves because of the shame and the guilt. But if we can release the past and then we obtain positive ID on ourselves, then the next step is we're able to re-engage with our future and our family.
I wonder why so many veterans push their family away.
Well, I did the same thing. And one of the big reasons is because we feel like they don't understand. Well, guess what? Of course they don't understand. Nor do we want them to be in a position to have to understand. And for a lot of us, it's vulnerability. We've been trained for so long that vulnerability will get you killed. Mm-hmm. And when you're in a war zone, when you're a cop on the beat or you're a firefighter fighting a fire or even a paramedic in the streets, yeah, vulnerability can get you killed. But guess what? When we're with our families, when we're with our spouses, our significant others, our partners, whatever, we are in the most vulnerable position ever. We are naked with them. We are sleeping with them. We are in the most vulnerable position, but the vulnerable position that we don't want to put ourselves in with them is talking about what we're going through. And a lot of times we say that it's because we're protecting them. We don't want them to know what we went through because we just don't want them to worry. But there's a deeper truth than that. Not that that's not true, but there's a deeper truth. And that deeper truth is ultimately we're protecting ourselves. We're protecting ourselves from being vulnerable. But the fact of the matter is, vulnerability is actually the purest form of strength, because if we have the courage to be vulnerable with those closest to us, now we're able to grow, and now we're showing that true courage that we actually do have. Right? So, yeah. So you know, that's a big reason why we push our family away. And I did the exact same thing. I did the exact same thing. And that caused so many problems. Like, you can see the ring is still on my finger. And we worked things back out, but I pushed her away to the point where I made a lot of extremely bad decisions that 99% of the time costs that person the marriage.
Yeah.
You know, so those are the reasons from what I've seen and talked to vets about, and personally experienced myself, as to why we push our families away. And it's not that we want to. We don't want to. And we want them to be a part of our lives most of the time, right?
Yeah.
But we put those barriers up. You're not going to see this side of me. But when we put those barriers up, it's kind of like if we were literally to put up brick walls around us. Like one in front, one in back, one on the side, one on the other side. What we just did was we just isolated ourselves from the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And we're doing just that when we're pushing our family away, when we're pushing other people away. And the thing is, we don't want that isolation. So it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Right.
And no, it makes a lot of sense, because I think I did it in my first marriage. You know what I mean? I don't know. It was weird little deal I was going through. You know what I mean? I didn't think, and it's correct. You don't think anybody knows what you're going through, nor do you expect them to, but it's like, just leave me alone. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And alcohol does not help it. You know what I mean? By no means.
Well, you're adding a depressant to depression.
Yeah.
One plus one equals two.
I drank enough to, you know, and that's a whole nother story. But mm-hmm. You also wrote a book, and I want to get into that and why you wrote the book. If you want to talk about that some.
Yeah. So the book is Drowning in Addiction, Sink or Swim. And I co-authored this book with two other people. And, you know, for my part of the book, I talk about my dad at the beginning. My dad, severe alcoholic for a very long time. And even when I was 2 years old, my mom divorced him because she found pills wrapped in a tinfoil wrapper in his flannel shirt in the pile of laundry when I was two. If I would have gotten into that, I might not be here today. And in 2012, I was a sergeant stationed on Camp Lejeune, and I got a phone call Long story short, I had to come home and I took my dad off life support. I watched him take his last breath. 3 months later, my son was born. And at the time I was working in the busiest CID office in the Marine Corps. So when we got done, you know, there's a memorial service and the cremation and everything, I went right back to work. No real time to grieve, no real time to really process what happened. And at the same time, now I'm dealing with depression and now I'm dealing with anxiety and PTSD is a part of that as well. And not that I had PTSD from the battlefield. I don't think I did. Do we have the hypersensitivity when we come back? Of course. We all go through that. However, the PTSD that I experienced came from my dad's death and watching the life leave his body. So I go back to work, still processing, not really having time to process. Now, 3 months later, my son's born. Now I'm learning how to be a new dad. My wife's learning how to be a new mom. She's dealing with probably some undiagnosed postpartum depression. And so I start pushing her away and I end up having an affair with her, having an affair on her and told her I wanted a divorce. I mean, my give a shit was so busted that I drove the U-Haul with her stuff and my son's stuff in it from North Carolina back to Indiana and then turn around and drove back. That's how much my give a damn was busted. So much I didn't care. That goes back to the isolation and the barriers and the pushing people away. Fortunately, it was about a 8 month separation. But we started, to try to work things back out. And so we started this long distance courtship again, and that's the same ring on my finger. So we're still together. And, but the command had found out about the affair. And so I was forced out. I was kicked out with an other than honorable discharge.
Really?
And at the core of all of this is depression, anxiety. And then the VA, after I got out, diagnosed me with chronic PTSD. When the psychiatrist on base said that I didn't have a history of PTSD, but she wouldn't say whether or not that I had the symptoms of it. And being in CID and getting kicked out with an other than honorable discharge, I'd never be a cop again. I'd never wear a badge again. Because with an OTH, if I get called onto the stand, they could call my integrity into question.
Mm-hmm.
Now I got to start over. So now it's like I'm this high school student that can't join the military, now has all of these financial obligations, a kid. And now I got to figure out what the hell I'm going to do when I grow up. And so, you know, I work different jobs. I got, just like a lot of vets, get fired from multiple jobs, forced to resign from multiple jobs. But that's where...
Were you having conflicts with people?
There was consistent conflicts with people, be it people in leadership or people that were, you know, different departments or, you know, whatever the case was. One of the first job was I was working in a staffing agency trying to find people jobs. But when you're dealing with unaddressed mental health issues, you really can't sell that well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I essentially destroyed a department, and ended up getting fired from that job. But it wasn't until I was working in a different job where, I started a new job, started a new gym, and I'm lifting and I see these bodybuilders on the wall and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to compete. You know, once again, it was the kid that just on a whim says he's going to do something, joins the Marine Corps after the Staff Sergeant talks to him for 2 hours. That kid came back up and, I see these pictures. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do that. And the funny thing was I went home and told my wife what I was going to do. And she looked at me like I had a second forehead growing. She's like, right. Oh, yeah. but but I did. And funny thing is, you know, she told me two things. She goes, "Don't lose your neck, and don't leave me for a boobless gym bimbo." Funny thing is, she's now competing herself. So
really,
so that came full circle. Yeah. But you know, competing and then getting fired from that job, I became a personal trainer. I was a personal trainer for about a year. And then that, that was just a stepping stone into, becoming a coach, you know? And so in 2018, I made the move from, training to coaching. And, yeah, so that's where we're at today. And, now the work is, focused on vets.
No, that's awesome. And you said you got a foundation.
Yeah, it's the Alpha Lima Charlie Foundation. And so, and a lot of people ask me what Alpha Lima Charlie stands for. So I'll throw that out there too. So Alpha is the true Alpha. The true Alpha knows that things can be fixed diplomatically, peacefully. The true Alpha knows that they don't have to be the biggest, fastest, strongest person in the room, but they surround themselves with people that make them better. Yep. Lima is leadership, or more importantly, self-leadership. You know, we tout leadership coming out of the military. But we forget that the hardest person that we have to lead and the first person that we have to lead is ourselves. And once we are able to lead ourselves, then we're able to lead other people. But if we can't lead ourselves, we can't lead others.
Yeah.
And then Charlie is communication, or again, self-communication. You know, part of the issue when we get out is, you know, civilians don't understand us. Well, of course they don't understand us. That's like Earthlings trying to understand Martians when they come to Earth. We're not going to understand the Martians, right? Because they come from a different world. But the problem is with communication is before we can communicate effectively with our civilian counterparts, we have to be able to communicate effectively with ourselves. A lot of us don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
Right. So self communication is extremely important as well. So that's what Alpha Lima Charlie stands for.
Now, what all do you do in that organization?
So this is the organization that provides the coaching for vets. We're at the beginning stages right now. I ran a pilot program with a group of 10 vets last year, and highly successful. I'll have to pull the statistics up for you, but you know, there was a 50-50 split on, you know, vets. There was five vets weren't suicidal or thinking about suicide or harming themselves. And five vets were either infrequently or frequently, they thought about harming themselves, putting themselves in harmful situations. And by the end of it, after 3 months, one person said they thought about it infrequently. But that one person that thought about it infrequently picked themselves up from Indiana and moved to Nevada.
Really?
When you're suicidal, you don't grow the courage to pick you and your daughter up and move clear across the country. It doesn't happen. Right. So it went from a 50-50 split down to damn near zero on people thinking about suicide. A lot of us don't really have good stress coping mechanisms. 100% of them said that they had received alternative, more positive ways of coping with stress. 100% of them said that by simply shifting perspective, they have a better quality of life because their perspective changed. And those are just a few. And these are self-reported. I'm not going off some scientific algorithm and, well, this person's actions are showing this. No, it's like, you tell me what this did or did not do for you.
Mm-hmm.
And those are just a couple of the results. Everything else was so high. The results were second to none.
How many of that 22 a day do you think is actually correct? You think it's actually 22 veterans a day take their lives?
So I think the 22 is a buzzword now. I think it's a marketing scheme now. I think the numbers are inaccurate, especially with, they say 22 vets commit suicide a day. The statistic is actually 14 to 16 vets, and the rest of the 22 is active duty or reservists.
Gotcha.
But that is an estimation, and that estimation I think is very inaccurate. But I did see, and this is the statistic I use. There was a report that came out. I forget how long ago it was. I think within the last couple of years. But the report came out and it said that since 2008, there have been more than 6,300 veteran suicides per year. That's more than 82,000 in 13 years.
Yeah, it's insanity.
We're missing entire communities of people.
Yeah.
Now, and think about the ripple effect that that has. It's in the millions. How many of these, there was a thing, I heard once that the richest place in the world, like, where do you think the richest place in the world is?
What is it, Dubai?
Okay. And a lot of people would say that, but that's furthest from the truth. The richest place in the world is the graveyard.
Why is that?
Think about how many world leaders, think about how many authors, how many actors, how many activists, how many advocates, how many people that could have made an impact, even on one person, didn't do it and died before they did.
Yeah.
Now think about how many vets that, I mean, the veteran community is just ripe with talent, with vision. But more than 6,300 since 2008 each year will never realize those talents. And think about how many people that could have been positively impacted never will now. That statistic is more sobering than any other statistic.
Yeah. Never even thought of it that way. You know what I mean? Because right. People don't understand. You know, there's veterans that come from every state, every different kind of background. And I've seen some talented ass dudes in the military. I've also seen some pretty jacked up dudes in the military. Some,
of course,
like, how did you even make it through basic training? There's some damn talented dudes. I'll never forget Shitty Schmitty. He was, he tried out for Fred Durst's band and almost damn made the damn thing. Mm-hmm. And, but September 11th happened. He couldn't do it. You know, plus he still had his military contract. They wanted him. This dude could play a guitar like it was unbelievable. And he went and tried out for the band, and then September 11th happened. I'll never forget that as long as I live. And he was so down about that, and but just taught himself how to play, and he was talented. And that's just one. We had people that could draw drawings that blow your damn mind, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and you had athletes. I mean, you had some raw ass athletes in the military, and then you had some damn shitheads. You know what I mean?
Well, you got the. I mean, there was a story a few years ago about the Army vet that played football for Clemson. Always came out with a flag in his hand.
Mm-hmm.
You got Adam Driver. I went to school with Adam,
mm-hmm.
and think about if he would have joined. Like, he joined. You know, he served four years in the Marine Corps. And think about if he would have taken his own life.
Yeah.
I mean, how many kids are just enthralled with Kylo Ren?
Mm-hmm.
And how many Star Wars fans just absolutely loved what he did with that part?
Yeah.
Even something like that. And now his, even more importantly, his foundation, which does improv classes for people, or it does improv shows for people that are deployed.
Really?
Think about the humor that he adds that, had he went the other way, wouldn't have been that would not have been created.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's doing absolutely amazing things. How many vets right now in that 6,300 per year could have made impact on one person? That's another 6,300 people that are impacted positively. What kind of impact would those people have made? Another 6,300 if they each just reach one. It's a spider web effect. So the negative ripple effect is in the millions.
Yeah, it's fucking alarming, actually.
Exactly.
You know.
And so that's what the Alpha Lima Charlie Foundation has set out to do, is start to reverse that process by helping them make those changes on the unconscious level to where they can start living the life that they want to and start making the impact in whatever fashion that looks like for them. Maybe it's just impacting their family. Maybe it's just impacting another vet. It doesn't really matter. We join the military knowing we're going to serve our country. So we're going to be of service to others. And I've asked people this multiple times. Okay, you when you joined, you said you wanted to serve your country. Did you want to serve the dirt, or did you want to serve the people standing on the dirt? And every time it's, I want to serve the people. Awesome. Then how can you still be of service to others when you get out, rebranding your purpose? Well, so by nature, the majority of vets want to be of service in some way, shape, or form, even if it's just to their loved ones. Nothing wrong with that. Perfectly fine. You are doing your part to raise your family and make an impact in that fashion. Cool. You might be raising tomorrow's world leader. You never know, right? But that is never going to be realized and never going to be accomplished for hundreds or for I don't know, tens of thousands, millions of people if the process isn't reversed.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, the National Guardsman, he's so much closer to his family now than he was in the past 9 years.
No shit.
Took 3 months. Oh, and he reached out to the widow, the staff sergeant's widow. He wanted to for so long, but he was afraid of what she was going to say. He was afraid that he was going to bring up bad memories. But I told him, I said, you reach out. She's going to be grateful that she wasn't forgotten. And she's going to be grateful at the positive impact that he had on your life. I said, you watch. You reach out. And she's going to say those things. Sure enough, he told me, he says, she said almost verbatim what you said.
That's good stuff, man. And do you get a link to this? What? How do you promote it?
So we have a website getting developed now. It's a more donor-friendly site. And that site is alphalimacharlie.org. I think it should be up within the next week, maybe two. But then there you'll be able to donate. I have a current website. It's alphagrowth.org, but everything is moving to alphalimacharlie.org. So you can go to the current one now. It's not really set up for donations or anything. That was the old site, and it was geared towards a member site that's no longer available to. But also reach out to me. I mean, if somebody has a question, they can reach out to me on Facebook. They can reach out to me through email. They can, vets listening to this, I've got a Facebook group on, Vets Mentoring Vets. If you're a vet, and it's for vets specifically, we're almost 13,000 strong, and by all means, join the group there. And you'll see some of the stuff that I'm doing there. I've put some coaching insights and, different things in there for people to ponder and, So there's a few avenues to find out more, but the Alpha Lima Charlie Growth website will be up and running hopefully within the next week.
Cool deal, man. I like to ask a lot of the guests that come on, do you conceal carry, open carry, and what platform do you run?
Concealed carry. I need to get a smaller one though, because I mean, I have a smaller one, but I've been so used to carrying my Kimber Ultra Carry 2 for years now, and it's a good weapon. The only time it's ever jammed was when I had reloads running through it, and my grandfather made those reloads, and he said he made them light. So he said, "Your gun is going to jam." But other than that, I've never had any issues. But I've got a, I got a couple other smaller weapons that I carry occasionally, but I've just gotten so used to the 1911.
Yeah. Well, my last thing is I try to say this on every podcast, you know, you just went into all the veteran steel stuff. And I kind of like to, you know, if there's a veteran out there that's suffering with, you know, all the symptoms of suicidal thoughts, PTSD, what's some insight you would give them as a, like a coaching deal to like get them out of that funk? You know, I know guys that are in it and I talk to them a lot. You know, what would you say to one listening?
So, I'd tell them just like I told, a vet that was contemplating suicide the other day, go back to a moment in your life where you felt joy, where you felt happiness. And it could be, it doesn't have to be anything extravagant, but it could be something as simple as getting ice cream as a kid. It could be something as simple as graduating boot camp. Just find any moment in time where you felt a level of joy, a level of happiness, a level of confidence, and go to the specific moment where you felt that joy or that happiness or that confidence or that calm. And when you find that specific moment, think about what you saw that day. Everything that you saw, see through your own eyes. Make it vivid color. Make it a movie. And then imagine that you have this dial where you turn it all the way up to 10. So you feel like you're seeing it happen right now. And then do the same thing with everything that you heard. Who said what to you? What did you say to other people? What background noise did you hear? What did you feel? What did you feel tactilely? What did you feel internally? Increase those positive feelings. See what you saw, hear what you heard, feel what you felt like it's happening in the moment right now. And as you do that, you start to realize that in the moment currently, in spite of your struggle, you are feeling that joy, that calm, that happiness, that confidence right now in that moment as you just did that. And this is something that you could do at any time. This is something that you can access anytime. Why? Because you have your unconscious mind is like a file. And or like a warehouse, and it's the warehouse is filled with different files. And so what you just did was you just went to the file of joy, of confidence, of happiness, or of calm, and you pulled the file, you pulled that memory, you gave it to your conscious mind. Your conscious mind opened it up and looked at it, and your conscious mind said, okay, it's time to feel that right now. So if you're struggling, rewind this again and again and again, replay it time and time again, and just listen to that. And what you're going to see, the more you practice this, the more you're actually really going to feel those positive emotions and those positive feelings in the moment, in spite of your struggle.
Yeah, that's good, man. I think that's all we got, brother. I'm honored that you came on. I hope it brings more awareness to what you got going on and helps you out. And like I said, I'll post everything in the link. I'll put links in the description of the podcast, and it was an honor to have you on, man, and I enjoyed talking to you. And is there a link or can you get your book off Amazon?
Yep. Yeah, you can find it on Amazon. You can find it on Barnes & Noble website as well.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll try to put that link in there as well. And yeah, and does if someone buys your book, does the proceeds go to something, or is it just something for you and the guys who wrote it?
It's honestly, because it's on Amazon, Amazon's going to make the most money off of it.
Oh, absolutely.
yeah, but, there will be, in the near future, once we're able to sustain, you know, a inventory of books on our own, then we'll be able to, have a portion of the proceeds going to the foundation, supporting mindset coaching for vets. So that's in the future, though.
Yeah, it kind of sucks. They probably take 75% of what you make off the damn book. Oh, they didn't do nothing.
$20 book, I'm making about $1.
It's insane.
It's yeah. I mean, the publisher's got to take their cut, and Yeah. And then Amazon's got to take theirs, and then the shipping's got to take the, and it's, yeah, it's just, you know, the person that did the most work gets the lowest amount. But that's why, you know, in the future, I'll have my own platform to be able to sell the books and get it pulled from Amazon. But that's where we're at right now.
No, that's good. Yeah, I'm writing a book as well. I'm 3/4 through the way, and damn, boy, it's a lot harder than what I thought.
Yeah, it's a labor of love for sure.
It is. But it brings back a lot of good memories and some not so good, and just kind of, I put it in my own words. I don't want nobody writing it for me. It's going to be, it's raw. It's real. There's no holding back. You know what I mean? It's, you know, if I don't like you, you're in there because I don't like you. You know what I mean? And if I love you, you're in there because I love you. You know what I mean?
Those are the absolute best books to read, man.
Yeah.
Because it's the raw stuff. It's the, you know, and I've had people read our book, and it's a thicker, I mean, it's not no, like, you know, small 10-page ebook. And there were people that started reading at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they were done by, you know, 8 PM. I read it in a day, you know? Yeah. So it's the raw stuff that people really want to read because they can relate to it.
Yeah.
It's not a textbook.
I'm not even a book reader, but I'll tell you a good book. it's Tom Satterley's book, All Secure, man. That book, I couldn't put it down, man. I literally, and I don't read books, I'll be honest with you. I've gotten into it here lately. I couldn't put that book down, man. It consumed the shit out of me. I couldn't get enough of it.
Well, I'll tell you another book that I'm currently reading, and it's the expanded second edition is a fairly new book, but it's Warrior by Doc Shauna Springer. And I'll go ahead and plug her real fast because she made an absolute phenomenal resource for anybody. You know, how to support those who protect us. You know, it's just a fantastic resource.
Yeah. And I had another guy on, his name's John Arroyo. He's a SF guy that he was attacked on American soil by another soldier. It was a mass shooting at Fort Hood, and his book is really good too. He got shot in the throat, and it's an amazing story. And his book is really good. So I always try to throw him up in, you know what I mean? So yeah. It's a great book called Attacked at Home, if anybody's wanting to purchase it, and All Secure. And actually Tom's wife wrote a great book too. It's I don't know why I can't think. Arsenal of Hope, which is a really good book. It's dealing with PTSD, and it's a great book, you know. So I'll plug her in as well. She wrote a good book, and Tom. So, but man, I appreciate you coming on, sharing your story, sharing what you got going on in the veteran community and what you're doing for veterans. I think it's a great thing. You know, we do an update podcast and see where the numbers are, and, you know, how many followers you got going on and how many vets you got helping, and, you know, just a follow-up podcast, you know.
Yeah.
Update
and stuff. And I would say, if you know, for anybody listening to you know, please reach out for now. If you want to support this, if you want to donate to this, and if anybody listening is they're a part of an organization that wants to support veteran causes, I mean, this is the one to support. There's a lot of great ones out there. This one's new, but the impact is already made. It's already made a massive impact. So please reach out if you're wanting to support.
Absolutely. Well, all right, brother. I enjoyed having you on. Scott, it's been a pleasure. And don't hesitate to reach out to me again if you want to do an update one. And I'd love to have you back on.
Yeah, man. We'll make it happen.
Yes, sir.
All right, brother.